Welcome to another edition of Big Blue Kickoff Live right here on Giants.com. John Schmelk, Paul Dottino with you. And the phone number, if you want to get in touch with us, is 201-939-4513. We'll do calls early in the show today. Dave Gettleman speaks from the NFL owner meetings down in Orlando at 12:15. As soon as that is over, we'll have Michael Eisen, who's covering that for us down in Orlando with us right here on Giants.com to talk about what Dave Gettleman had to say and what Pat Shurmur had to say this morning and what John Maron, Steve Tisch had to say yesterday. So we'll have that later on in the show, but until then, it'll be a lot of your calls at 201-939-4513. Paul, we kind of discussed a lot of the Beckham stuff yesterday. Some more news came out a little bit later on. Nothing to me, though, that is really news-making, but I'll summarize a little bit, at least my perspective here. The rush and the idea that there's some urgency to do something quickly with this doesn't make any sense to me. He's still recovering from a serious ankle injury. There's no indications as of yet, except for Ian Rappaport's report, that there's going to be some type of protracted holdout. That's a wait-and-see situation. And the most important thing for me is, contractually speaking, the Giants have him under contract on his fifth-year option this year, at a fixed number that he has to play under, and they have the option to franchise tag him next year if they so desire, and in the meantime, they can try to work out a long-term contract if they like. But there's certainly a lot of time to make those decisions, and there isn't an urgency, at least to me, that something has to be resolved in any sort of quick fashion.
There is not, and I would furthermore say, as I put on my Twitter account this morning at Giants WFAN, that an absence from a voluntary off-season workout is not to be termed a holdout, which many people are so quick to do.
Correct.
And
holdout only begins when you can get fined for not being here.
When it's mandatory.
And that is mandatory minicamp, which is in the middle of June.
And quite honestly, okay, you know, this has been the case for years and years and years and years. And yet we have many experienced people in the business who insist on calling a voluntary absence a holdout. It boggles the mind. I don't understand why. It's like calling a wide receiver a tight end. It's not the same position. A center is not the same position as running back. A voluntary workout is not a mandatory workout, therefore holdout does not apply. So let me get that out of the way first, because it's a pet peeve of mine.
Understood.
And it does apply to something that you've alluded to. The other thing is that Pat Shurmur this morning in his coach's breakfast media session, I'm quoting to Paul Schwartz of the New York Post, and I'm quoting Paul, Shurmur said it is his understanding Odell Beckham Jr. will be at the Giants facility in April for the start of the offseason workouts.
And that's based on what Beckham said to him when they met in California.
Last
I imagine
week.
When Shurmur was out there for the pro days of Rosen and
Shurmur had indicated that.
Correct.
As far as I'm concerned, that's the end of the story.
Now, again, he said, that's my understanding. That doesn't mean Beckham necessarily told him that directly, but I think that's probably more reliable than something you would hear from a third-party source.
And, folks, I'm simply trying to give you the facts. The off-season workout program has a beginning date. It has an ending date. The media has access to only specific days during the off-season program, as we well know. There are times when players are not at certain days in the offseason program.
But they might be at others.
Correct. And as was the case last year, a certain player, and I'm not getting into names because I don't want headlines, but a certain player was not at certain offseason program dates, which were voluntary, when the media was present. And the media needed to make a headline out of it, and so they did. But that player happened to be at other off-season dates when the media was not present. But because they didn't see him, and because they did not know that, they made a firestorm out of it. So what I'm telling you, folks, is please take a grain of salt with a lot of what you see, read, and hear when the facts are not always before the people who are relaying them to you. It's not their fault. The newspaper folks are only given limited days to come to the facility. If they can't report what they don't see, they can't report what they don't know. The problem is, then they assume they do know everything. That's where it gets really, really muddy. And so that is my little bit of a soapbox conversation or soapbox speech today, John, as we prepare to take phone calls.
And I want to touch on a couple of things Pat Shurmur said based on the good coverage, and I'm going to use a lot of – you have Paul Schwartz stuff up. I'm going to reference some of Tom Rock stuff. Mm-hmm. And Pat Shurmur was asked a lot about Davis Webb during the course of his player media availability rather this morning. And it was interesting as the Giants make their decision of who to draft that Thursday, they will have a minicamp on Tuesday, Wednesday, and Thursday. So that'll really be the first time Pat Shurmur has a chance to see Davis Webb on the field doing football stuff in person.
Well, assuming he didn't see him at his pro day.
He might have saw him at his pro day.
And at the combine, you know, last year. I'm sure he
saw him. Doing stuff in pads and a helmet
doing
in
stuff
person.
With the Giants.
And in pads and a helmet in person.
Yeah.
Okay. So this is the quote from Pat Shurmur. It'll be a great way for Davis to showcase what he can do. He's going to get a lot of reps, and he probably would anyway. I don't want to make this sound like it's a showcase for Davis, but as a guy we're interested in seeing, he's certainly going to get his fair share of reps. I think we're going to take in any information we can all the way up to the time we're on the clock. A couple other quotes here. I went back and watched his college film to compare him to the guys coming out this year. I went back and revisited my notes from a year ago, and we had him rated highly. Of course, what does highly mean? Who knows? The unfortunate thing for me is that there's just not a lot of him playing football in a Giants helmet, which would have been a good thing for me to see moving forward. That is what it is. There is no substitute for experience, and even though he was here and didn't play a bunch, he became experienced in ways that you can't if you haven't been there. I've got high hopes for him as a productive player in this league. It's a little bit of an unknown. The advantage we will have is that we get extra mini camp heading right up into the draft, which teams do get when they hire a new head coach. Mm-hmm. And this is all referencing a quote he had about whether or not the Giants could pick a quarterback at number two. And the quote Pat Shurmur gave on that, his quote was, there is a, quote, urge to find a young generational quarterback. Whether or not there's one in this upcoming draft class, he answered, time will tell. That's the quote, time will tell. In other words, it's wide open.
Yeah. I will say this, and I'm not talking out of school, because there is a quarterback coach, or a throwing coach, if you will, that has been working with Davis Webb during this past offseason. And he has been putting up clips, video clips on Twitter.
I've seen.
So this is public information. I'm not telling you anything you don't know, other than to tell you that Davis Webb, outside of a week or so where he went home during the offseason to just visit family, he has been at the Giants facility and at the workout facility down by Rutgers every day. Okay, folks?
I saw him this morning.
And he has been throwing. Now, he can't throw at the Giants facility. All he can do at the Giants facility is the weight room.
And film.
Right. And that's unofficial film.
And he cannot have interaction with the coaches, looking at Shurmur's playbook, none of that stuff. And he's not doing it.
Correct.
Like that. Correct.
That he's not doing. Okay. What he can do, he can look at whatever unofficial videotapes are available through the NFL Game Pass 22 of the Minnesota Vikings to look at what Shurmur's offense was in Minnesota.
Correct.
That he's allowed to do.
And he can even, I believe he's allowed to look at his practice reps from last year and stuff like that.
I think
that
he
as
is, because
well.
Yes. I believe that's what he has been doing a lot of when he's at the facility itself. In addition, he's had this throwing coach checking over all his mechanics. It's down by Rutgers, and he has been throwing down there with a number of different people, including teammates on his own, to make sure that he's got all of that stuff down and that he is absolutely as smooth as silk when it comes to this mini camp that's going to be coming up in just a few weeks. So I just throw that out to you, folks, because it's more information that you now know that maybe the writers haven't told you about.
All right, some more stuff here from Tom Rock on what Shurmur said earlier today. On Barkley, I don't see anything he can't do. Nelson, he's wired the right way to play the position. On Chubb, a dynamic pass rusher, and we all know how important that is, a really outstanding player. Let's see. Again, the quote I gave before, is there a generational quarterback in this year's draft? Schirmer said time will tell, but these are all very talented guys who have a chance to be really, really good players. Let's see. Quote, unquote, what does Eric Flowers have to do to win his starting job at right tackle? His answer, block his guy well.
Good idea!
Yeah. Why pro days are important for quarterbacks. You see them throw. You can see and feel the velocity. You can see the accuracy. A lot of things you can see on tape, and yet you still have to see it in person. Schirmer on why off-season programs are important. When you build a chemistry, you can't develop those relationships unless you are working together. That's why I think it's super important that you have a high attendance rate in the offseason. I know there is a resistance sometimes, but the players need to be there, especially when you're adding new players, there are new schemes, and it's really the best thing for them. It's important that they go through that process. So those are some quotes from Schirmer from today. I will throw in one that kind of struck a chord with me, and I think it's fairly significant. Maybe that's a little strong. I think you might be able to draw an inkling out of it. And it's similar to something he said at the Combine media availability when he was out there. He was asked about the running back position, and he says, it takes a village. And that tells me that he doesn't foresee one player taking a large majority of the reps there. And then what I glean from that, if you don't see that a position as a spot where one player will take a majority of the reps there, do you want to use a second overall pick on a player that plays that position that would not take the majority of the reps at the position you're picking him to play? Like, if you're only going to play Barkley 70% of the snaps, is it worth picking him second overall when Quentin Nelson will play 100% of the snaps at guard? Or Chubb's going to play 85% of the snaps at end?
There's a logical train of thought there.
Just an inkling.
Again, the problem is Quentin Nelson is not a potential game breaker that's going to force an offensive defensive coordinator to lose sleep.
Absolutely.
And Barkley will.
100%.
And so which angle of the prism do you want to look at when you make the decision? That's the problem.
And I will say this, and again, Dave Gettleman, I think, will talk shortly, and Paul and I will follow along with Michael Eisen's out there. He's going to give quotes. We'll have Mike on later in the show. Paul Schwartz, Tom Rock, Art Stapleton, Dan Duggan, all the guys that are down there, we're keeping an eye on their accounts. So we'll kind of regurgitate some of those quotes as we get them. But again, we'll have Michael Eisen when Gettleman's done. I would imagine he'll finish somewhere between 12:30 and 12:45. So whenever he's done, Mike will text us. We'll get him on the line, and we will talk about that with him. So that's kind of what I gleaned out of the last couple days. Anything else you want to hit on before we get to the calls?
I just think that the New York Post just put up a story last night, which is really funny. Did you see this headline?
I did.
The headline is, it's a Paul Schwartz story, and the writers don't write the headlines. The headline people do that in the office. The headline is, here's what those bogus Odell Beckham rumors really mean. It's interesting to me how a newspaper would write a headline about bogus rumors when it is, in fact, the newspapers who put out those bogus rumors.
Well,
in a lot of cases, although in
right.
this case, it was a response or a follow to a TV report.
Well, yes, but the trade inquiries came from one specific newspaper, and we all know that the New York Post and the New York Daily News have a bit of a rivalry.
Yes.
So I think both papers, whenever they have a chance to take a shot at the other paper, certainly are not shy about taking said shot.
Understood. I just think right now the industry is in a pretty messed up situation.
And by the way,
that's what I think.
And the story is actually in the form of a Q&A.
Yes.
And I just read the first one. The question that Paul is putting to himself, are the Giants shopping Beckham? Short answer, no. Long answer, no, they are not.
Exactly.
Oh,
in any event, it is just, I don't know, I just thought it was kind of funny to see a newspaper poke a prod at its own media, but you do make a good point. It certainly is more directed at the folks across the street, at the other tabloid in the city.
Yes.
Good point, John.
Needless to say, those two newspapers have a little bit of a rivalry.
I just think the whole industry is a mess these days. But that's just my opinion. Anyway. Let's go.
201-939-4513. 201-939-4513. If you want to get up with us on Twitter, it's hashtag Giants Chat. But for now, let's do some calls. And Scott in New Mexico has been holding the longest. Scott, how are you, buddy?
I'm good. How are you guys doing?
We're great.
Hello.
Good. I want to talk about something you guys discussed yesterday, and then I want to talk about the free agency signings. But the point yesterday was whether Quentin Nelson was worth the second-round pick.
Second overall pick.
I think you both would acknowledge that it takes basically 53 players to really make a team.
More, actually.
Yeah, and Quentin Nelson obviously is regarded as the best offensive lineman probably coming out in the draft. Yet, I make it sort of analogous to the situation with Joe Thomas, who was a Pro Bowler, and you know, he never made a playoff game. So is taking Quentin Nelson in the second round really a wise choice? Even if he becomes a Hall of Famer, he's one cog in a wheel, and the Giants have some major gaps all over the field.
Yeah, but Scott, you can make that.
I was a Saquon Barkley guy.
Yeah, but, yeah, but Scott, you can make that argument.
Towards Paul that they need multiple players because of all the sort of the mess the Giants have gotten themselves into. I
Got
know
it.
They just lost Josh Morrow for four games, and that's going to impact the Giants. You know, they don't know if Eli Apple is going to make it or if, as you talked about earlier, if Eric Flowers was a bust at left tackle, what makes anybody think he's going to make it at right tackle? So I just wanted to get your perspective, at least on this point, if he's really the impact player you need if this, in the second round, or do you really need to draft down and get multiple players?
Well, here's the thing. There are two ways to look at this.
Second overall, by the way, not second round.
Right,
I just want
to make second overall.
Clear.
There are two
exactly.
ways to look at this, and both of them have a lot of weight behind them. And that's not a cop-out, but it's true. The first way to look at it is really, really simple. And that is, hey, you're absolutely right. And I have advocated since November, knowing the Giants were going to be in the top 10 and even higher, trade the pick if at all possible, get the shopping cart, and get as many quality bodies in here as you possibly can. I have advocated that for months. And by the way, had a lot of arrows shot into my back from fans all over the place for saying that.
I feel like early in the process, I feel like people got more accepting as that as we've gotten
since
along.
The combine.
Yeah,
there have been more folks who have come onto my side of the river on that one. But so I'm with you. I do think that should still be the top priority if they can get the boatload of picks.
Right.
Short of that, the argument for Nelson is really simple. Eli Manning is in an advanced age where he has been as healthy as a quarterback could be at this stage of his career. And quite frankly, with the way teams are pulling off stunts and they're getting more and more pressure on the quarterback, especially between the tackles, Quentin Nelson is a guy who can help keep Eli Manning not only in a game, but upright. And you badly need that if you're the Giants, and he is nearing 40 years old, and he's only got so many games left in his career. God knows how many, but we know that sand is running out.
And, Paul, I will throw in another thing. I think he's also the highest graded player in the draft and has the highest floor with the least chance of being a bust. It is a safe selection.
As we said yesterday,
yes,
we both would
numbers.
Make a bet that he probably has the best chance to make the Hall of Fame out of the blue chippers.
Out of any player in the draft.
Correct. Okay, so that falls on that side. And here's the last part. The last part is, if you are going to back to being a power running team, which we think Gettleman wants to do, and Shurmur has shown signs that he wants to do some of that too, well, you better have a mountain of a man, a bruiser of a man, a bulldozer of a man on that offensive line who you can rely on to absolutely, positively be that guy to get that running game going, especially in short yardage and in the red zone. Because that will do wonders to help Eli Manning, who has always been one of the best play-action quarterbacks in the game. So there are strong feelings on both sides of that prism. There's really not a right or wrong answer there.
Okay. My other questions have to do with some of the free agency signings, and then I'll take the questions off the air. But I'm not sure what the Giants are contemplating, so maybe you can help me out. James Stewart, for example, that they got from Carolina, he had the worst, according to Pro Football Focus, he had his worst rating ever. And I know he's going to be 31, and I think he averaged about 3.4 yards a carry. What's the Giants thinking with him? And also Patrick Omame, who's the new guard they signed, he was ranked by Pro Football Focus as the 36th best offensive guard in the league. So I'm wondering what the Giants are contemplating with those two free agency signings, and if you think they'll fit into the Giants scheme, because the Giants are still going to need a running tech. I'm not sure Wayne Gallman and Paul Perkins are the answer. So if they're not, what do you think was the what was the rationale in actually hiring players like that? And again, thanks, guys. I'll take the
thanks,
question
God.
Off the air.
Good questions. Stuart, real quick. Look, at 31, you're right. He's not the guy that's going to, you know, be the type of bell cow that he was in Carolina last year, in my opinion. I think he'll be more of a situational short yardage back that's going to help you on the goal line. And remember how bad the Giants were in third and one situations last year? They were the worst in the league. They were a nightmare. They need help there, and I think Stewart provides that bruising between the tackle guy that can help in those situations. Not to mention you have a young running back room. You want a veteran there to try to bring these guys along. He's a good locker room guy. He sets the culture Dave Gettleman's looking for. So I think that's your answer on Stewart. As for Omame, you say he's the 36th ranked guard, like that's a bad thing. Do you know what that means? He's right in the middle of starting guards in the league. There are 64 starting guards in the NFL every year. Two on each team. So he's right in the middle.
And by the way,
that means he's a solid starter, which, by the way, is probably better than what the Giants had that position last year once Justin Pugh got hurt.
Well, and that's the other part to this. He also has proven to be durable.
Correct. And he's a guy, too, that at least from my looking at the tape, he's not going to make any mistakes. He might get beat because the guy's too strong or too fast or, you know, lacks some athleticism, but he's smart. He knows what he's doing. He's a technician, and he's not going to make any mistakes. Like those plays last year where you had these free runners on stunts because guys didn't know where to go, that's not going to happen to him. He's not going to be a dominant player where you're going to look at him in a film and be like, oh, man, look at him dominate this guy. You're not going to get that. But he's going to be a solid starter, which is fine. That's okay. Given what the contract terms were, that's a good, good signing.
Yeah, 13 games, 13 starts last year with Jacksonville. Had a 16-game start situation with the Bucs back in 14. At other times, he has been a backup and not a starter. You see, I think the best way to describe this is that there are levels of play, whether it's excellent, elite, good, very good, mediocre, subpar, poor. If you're the Giants, your whole goal this year was to upgrade in as many positions as you possibly could. The Giants have upgraded their offensive line already with the moves that they've made to this point. How much more they can upgrade remains to be seen, especially with the draft in front of us. But, John, the whole point is they have upgraded their line. And while they're not going to be a top five line, unless maybe Quentin Nelson gets added to the mix, or McGlinchey.
Which would change things, especially
Which would change
Nelson.
Things a lot.
Yes. I think Nelson plays a more important position. Rather, McGlinchey plays a more important position. But I think year one, Nelson certainly has a bigger impact on your line than Quentin Nelson does.
I think you and certainly then, could say that.
Then Mike McGlinchey does. I'm
right.
Sorry, yes.
But the point is, if your line is substandard, like the Giants' offensive line's production was last year, if you just get up to middle of the pack, you have improved. You have upgraded the line. And that's the goal. You're not going to go from substandard to the best line overnight unless you get really lucky. And all of a sudden now you got Soldier on the line. You got Quentin Nelson on the line. Omame comes in. And again, his level is higher than what you had there because you had a mishmash of guys who were injured on the field. Okay. I mean, That would be a significant jump, but a very rare situation to make that wide of a leap or that high of a leap in 1 year.
201-939-4513. Tony in Washington, D.C. is on line three. He's up next on Big Blue Kickoff Live. Hey, Tone.
Hey, Jen. Thanks for taking my call.
Thanks for calling in.
Man, these Giants fans. I got time for some tough love again.
Why, Tony?
So
what's up?
Last week, and I was saying how you can draft, you know, say QB at two and still build But that was on the heels of trading JPP. And I still stand by that comment, but it is a little different now. And I mentioned that to mention the fan base and this OBJ, you know, issue. Look, I can slice this hair as many ways as you want, but I'm going to put it to the fan base as simple as I can. OBJ not playing got you 3 wins and Eli Manning benched. I can't put it any simpler than that. He has been the best player in our division for 4 years. It's now Carson Wentz. I get that. But of the last 4 years, 3 of them, he has been the best player. Now, if you want to trade him in order to rebuild this roster, I see the logic. I can't deny that. But understand that we're not going to be scoring points without him next season. I don't care who you draft, how many linemen. We saw Sterling Shepard all year. We saw the rest of those players. OBJ scores the points. So I just want fans to know that. Let's not pretend that we're going to be going into Lincoln or wherever or to the Cowboys without OBJ, and we're going to be putting up 25, 30 points. Let's not pretend that's going to happen without OBJ on this roster. So I just want the fan base to know that. Okay, if you want 2018 to turn over this roster, which I agree with, then that's what it's going to be without OBJ.
Now, Tony, I agree with you. Tony, real quick, I just want to say I agree with you. Odell Beckham Jr.'s loss last year was a huge deal, and you can't undersell it, but he wasn't the only loss last year, too. You had games where you didn't have him and Sterling Shepard, and you had 2 or 3 offensive linemen out. So I think while Odell was the biggest part of the equation, and I'm not arguing with you, not having Shepard at the same time and losing a lot of your offensive linemen at the same time also, I think, were part of the 3-13. You know what I mean?
Tony, I want to give you...
Go ahead.
I want to give you some numbers that you can use for your argument next time. In the last 4 seasons, the Beckham numbers, with and without, the Giants' stats are dramatically different. They average a touchdown less a game when he was out of the lineup. It's 22.7 points per game when he played, 16.9 points per game when he did not. That's a touchdown a game. That's a lot of points. And in fact, most defensive coordinators will tell you their goal every year is to allow 17 points or less per game, and we will probably wind up having a playoff team. That's what most defensive coordinators will tell you.
Tony, look, Tony, no one's arguing the impact of him.
That's a fact.
Yeah, no question.
The Giants' record with Odell, 21-26, without 5-12. So they got a lot further to go if they're going to be in the playoff conversation if Beckham is not here.
Correct.
That's a fact.
Yep.
That's a fact. No one is crazy enough to argue that. So please don't put that on us, because I'm not taking that argument up.
Correct.
No way in the world.
Oh, no, guys, I know you're not. I'm saying to the fans. I'm being specific. You guys know what you're talking about. I'm talking to the fans that think that we can get Saquon Barkley, and he's going to be Zeke Elliott running into 250-pound linebackers chewing up 33 minutes of clock.
No, that's not going
to
happen.
To those fans.
No, that's not going
to
happen. That's not going to happen.
Yeah. Those fans that think, well, you know, OBJ, we don't really win with him, even though he's taking 8-yard slants, 60 yards with no one blocking downfield. You know, we can get anyone to do that. You know, I'm talking to those fans. Now, I know he's a headache. I know he's a headache. John Mara loves him, but he's really ticking him off. I get it. I can't blame Mr. Mara for, you know, really getting at Odell, because Odell drives you crazy. I get it. But he is a difference maker. And at $8 million, he is the most valuable player in the league, I would say probably next to Joey Bosa, because of their paycheck.
Damn,
they're paid
close.
Nothing
sure.
And give you that kind of production.
No argument
you
from
us. Beat it.
No
you
argument.
Can't beat it. So I just want fans to know, if you're so quick to trade them, and it might happen, just know that 2018 is a retooling year. Don't be looking at beating the Eagles. Don't be looking at beating the Cowboys, because it's not going to happen.
No. Tony, if they trade Odell Beckham Jr. this offseason, it's not a retooling year. It's a full-fledged rebuild.
Exactly. And I'm not saying that's wrong, but I'm just letting the fans know. That's what it's going to be. And the reason why I bring that up is because if that is the case, if that does turn out, I am 10 times more convinced that we need to draft the quarterback at 2. And it's not because I don't believe in Davis Webb. And this is what I got to say about the whole Davis Webb situation. John Mara saw where the season was going and said, hey, guys, we got to take a look at these other quarterbacks because we're probably going to be picking high and have a pick of quarterbacks. Yes, the Eli Manning situation wasn't handled the best. I get that. But the point was to get Davis Webb on the field. That is what the organization was doing. The fan base had a hissy fit. And now the same fan base is upset at the organization for not getting Davis Webb on the field. It's like, well, wait a minute. They were trying to. You turned into a snowflake, and then he didn't get to play. That's what happened. So with that said, I want competition at every level if this is where we're going. And the most important position is quarterback. And if Davis Webb can stand nose-to-nose with Josh Rosen, who's my guy, and beat him out, then I'll go buy a Davis Webb jersey. But we got to stop pretending that we're not all where we are. I mean, do Giants fans watch other teams? Like, do they really think Saquon Barkley is going to leap us above Ezekiel Elliott and Jay Ajayi? And who is to say that the Redskins aren't going to put Darius Geis with their new running, with their new quarterbacks?
Tony, great stuff.
Thank you, Tony. Appreciate it. Call again, please.
Yeah, good stuff. Very exciting.
You know, I don't know what's going to happen in the next several weeks when the Giants do start their offseason program and start throwing and so forth in front of some of the writers during some of these media avails. But you know every single writer is going to have his telescopic vision on Davis Webb, because they're going to want to catalog and log every single throw that he makes, because the bloodthirsty fans out there who want a quarterback can't wait to hear exactly what Davis Webb is doing during these workouts. I know. I get it.
And no one is going to argue with the point that Odell Beckham Jr.
makes this team better.
And his presence on this team makes all the difference on offense. Now,
on game day, it's unquestionable.
I think with a different scheme, they might be able to survive his loss a little bit better than they did before, maybe. But it's still, it doesn't matter what type of scheme you are. We're still on the earth, and we're still playing with 11 guys on offense versus 11 guys on defense.
Yes.
His loss will be a significant one. And you take the best player off the field for any one of these teams, it's going to hurt them severely. And that's why, despite, you know, John Mara's perceived frustration when he spoke to the media, Steve Tisch made the best point of all. You get to a point where somebody's behavior, and this is what Steve Tisch said yesterday, crosses the line where it becomes bad for business. Odell Beckham Jr. is not to the point where he's bad for business yet. His value on the field is so high, it overcomes all the little things that might be annoyances.
And by the way, Can we also stop making this so complicated? The fact remains, Odell Beckham Jr. is the only player on this offense who throws fear into a defensive coordinator when they're getting ready to play the Giants.
Oh, absolutely.
He's the only one. Can we just cut it right down to its bare bones? Which is why if the Giants do get a Barkley, now there are two guys who are going to make defensive coordinators stay up all night. Bottom line, you don't get Barkley, you trade Odell Beckham, you got nobody who's going to scare a defensive coordinator. Case closed.
201-939-4513. Greg in New Jersey is up next. Hey, Greg.
Hey, guys. Can you hear me? I'm on the handless thing.
Yeah, you are. You sound loud and clear, Greg. It's a great connection.
Yes, sir.
All right. I just want to address the draft pick and Odell for a minute.
Sure.
The two most important things in any in this CBA is a cost control quarterback and draft picks. If you draft a quarterback, this is the choice with the two pick. You either draft the quarterback early and you get that guy and you hold him for a couple years while Eli's still under contract, you mold him, and then you put him on the field. Or if you don't rate a guy to be your starter, you trade back, which you can do with Buffalo, and get a huge amount of picks because the Jets traded up specifically to get there before Buffalo.
Yep.
You can fleece Buffalo and you can get first round picks and build a team.
Mm-hmm.
That can happen, and you need starters, especially with the amount of needs the Giants currently have, and you can really kickstart a rebuilding process.
Yeah, but Greg, here's the thing. Right now the Giants don't have a cost control quarterback though.
You can draft that at the two slot if
no.
you really want.
No, no,
actually,
no, they have
really
one.
Believe in Davis Webb.
They have one. Davis Webb is the cost control quarterback.
No, but Eli Manning takes up $28 million of cap space. Their quarterback position takes up a lot of cap room. The whole point of having a cost control quarterback is that you don't have to put the money into the quarterback position so you can spend it elsewhere.
Exactly.
Eli Manning
and
takes
that's
up
why I'm saying
cap space
you do
right
that.
Now.
The reason why – you have two choices here. You either draft the quarterback at two or you trade back and you get picks.
No, but Greg, here's my point, though.
You're wrong. You're missing the entire point.
And John, we lost Greg. We lost
finish
Greg.
Finish him.
We lost him. No, all but right. Greg, here's the thing. Look, I agree with you. And look, I'm much more on the quarterback bandwagon than Paul is. But having the cost control of quarterback to build the team around him only works if Eli Manning's not here.
Right. The present-day guy's costing a lot of money.
Correct. And that's fine. I'm not telling you that's a bad thing. You should get rid of him. But your theory is absolutely correct. The Seahawks benefited from having Russell Wilson as their starting quarterback, not making any money.
Right.
That's how they were able to pay Cam Chancellor and Richard Sherman and Earl Thomas and K.J. Wright and all those guys. That's how they were able to do it. It works.
Right.
The Cowboys have that advantage for another two seasons as well with Dak Prescott. They can pay these other guys because Dak Prescott's not making any money. Same with the Eagles and Carson Wentz. It works. But as long as Eli Manning's on the roster taking up a $20-plus million salary cap slot, no, you don't have cost control at the quarterback position because he's taken up whatever it is, 20% of your cap space.
And that's why his argument's bogus, because he says you want to have the cost control quarterback in-house. That's why you take one at number two. Well, guess what? Davis Webb is cheaper on your books than that number two pick is going to be.
Correct, and I think that works better.
So,
and Paul,
your point just loses all its water.
Yeah, and look, Greg, I know, I understand where your head is and where you're going. But I think that works more when you have a great supporting cast in place, and then you add the cost control quarterback.
And if that cost control quarterback is your starter
and can play, correct. And
so too many other factors he left out.
And we don't know if Davis Webb's that guy. We don't know if the guys in this draft is that guy. And quite frankly, and look, Pat Shurmur and Dave Gettleman basically said this in their introductory press conference. This team was 3-13. Needs a lot of work. They have to embrace the record.
Sure
it's
does.
Not like you have a – it's not like you're in a situation – I'm trying to think of a good team that would fit this criteria – where you're 8-8 because your roster's really good. You don't have a quarterback. And if you just had a quarterback that was good, you'd get to 11 or 12 wins. That's not where the Giants are right now as an organization. They're still filling out the stuff around the quarterback. You know what I mean? So – that's not really the situation the Giants are currently in. Looks like Dave Gettleman has started speaking down at the owners' meeting.
The photos are already up on Twitter.
Well, unfortunately, since he only started talking at 12:40,
there's a good chance we're not going to get any recap.
By the time he's done, the show's going to be over.
Probably.
So, unfortunately, we were not going to hear from Michael Eisen
down at
the owners' meeting, but we will try to glean from Mike, Paul Schwartz, Tom Rock, Dan Doug, and all the guys that are down there some quotes from Gettleman. As we move forward, I'm sure he's going to tell you exactly what his contract offer to Odell Beckham Jr. is going to be, exactly what trade offers he's gotten for the wide receiver, and I'm sure he'll share all of that with us right before he tells us who he's going to pick at the second overall pick in the draft. So we'll have all that information for you in the next 20 minutes. Make
Why don't
sure you
we
stay
just call
tuned.
Up Dave ourselves and get him on the phone?
Let's go to Warren in New York. He's up next. Hi, Warren. How are you?
Good, thanks.
Hi.
Thanks for taking my call, guys.
You're welcome.
As much as I like Barkley, would love to see him in a Giant uniform, I think Nelson really is, you know, the best pick long term for a variety of reasons. Mm-hmm. And a scenario that I haven't yet to hear any discussion on is up until like 2 weeks ago, the pundits had Cleveland taking Barkley number one and then get their quarterback in the fourth slot.
Yeah, Warren, that's true, and I think that was a mistake by all the pundits. You know, I don't know if you've listened to the show a whole lot the last couple weeks, but I have always been under the assumption and the impression that the Browns had to take the quarterback at one. They haven't had a quarterback since Bernie Kosar in 1993. That's 25 years. If you thought that they were going to sit there and wait and say, hey, whatever quarterback's left, we'll take them. What's the difference? That's not how NFL teams operate. So even though fans were saying that and media people were saying it, I
didn't. I understand that.
Yes.
But with the Jets moving up, that scenario really doesn't work?
No, not at all.
They're going to have to take their quarterback number one.
Correct. So you're going to have a quarterback at one and three.
Yeah. But if they're really hot on getting Barkley, the only way to be assured of that is to move up and take the Giants pick. Now they're going to have the top two picks in the draft. And I think if it's Darnold and Barkley, you know, they can pretty much fold the tent and said we had, you know, one hell of a draft.
Hey, and, but Warren, I think they can fold the tent and say they had one hell of a draft no matter who they drafted for.
Yeah.
Yeah. But I was thinking then number four, the Giants are assured of getting Nelson. So I didn't know what the chances of that happening and what the Giants could get, you know, pick wise, or if it's just silliness.
No, I don't think it's silliness, Warren. I've gone of other people. Seriously, I've gone other people on Twitter to pose the same scenario.
This has
to me
been talked about
that,
before
that you just did. I've never been of the belief that it makes a lot of sense for the Browns to make that move from 4-2, simply because, much like you, me, and Paul, we really like Barkley, Chubb, and Nelson anyway. So why would you give up 2 second round picks just to choose between those three guys when they're all really good players? And that's what it would cost. For the Browns to go from 4-2, if I'm the Giants, I ask for the first overall pick in the second round, and I ask, I think, what, they own the third overall pick in the second round, something like that, 33 and 35, right? Those are the two picks I would need. And if I'm the Browns GM, if I'm John Dorsey, and I'm not, and the Giants said, you can move up to two for your 2 second round picks, I would say no thank you, and I wouldn't even blink an eye when I said it.
Heck, the Giants might even ask for the two twos and a third.
Yeah, and well, and
they
I would,
might.
And I wouldn't give them that either.
I know you wouldn't, and I don't blame you.
And I don't think you would either if you were the Browns, right?
I don't think it makes a very good decision on their part, no.
Yeah, Warren, and that's the thing. That's why I think rather than the Browns at four, I think your better bet
Denver
is Denver at five, because they need the quarterback, and it would be more important for them to move up from 5-2 than the Browns from 4-2.
That's the hot spot, the Denver Broncos at five.
But the Giants wouldn't be assured, you know, of at number five of getting Nelson, but...
Well, no, again, but Warren, you're assuming that the Browns want Barkley, and... Again, I told this to Paul yesterday. Tony Grossi, who's covered the Browns longer than anybody, who, by the way, said Joe Thomas was retiring 2 months ago, and people said he was wrong, and, what ended up happening? Joe Thomas retired. Mm-hmm. He has said that he does not believe the Browns will pick Saquon Barkley fourth overall because John Dorsey believes in a running back by committee, and he doesn't want to invest that type of resources in somebody that's going to share a job. So I don't think there's a guarantee that the Browns take Barkley at four. I think there's a good chance they'll take Chubb to play along with their pass rusher from last year. Or they're paying two guards a lot of money. So I'm not sure they'll do that, but that's a possibility too, sure.
Look, there are people now as we get closer to the draft who are saying, and I heard Pat Kerwin even say this on Sirius, there are people who actually think Nelson could play some tackle in the NFL.
Well, we talked about it at the combine. I think, look, I'm not telling you he's going to be a Hall of Fame tackle, but if you need a guy to play, remember how Larry Allen kicked out and played tackle for the Cowboys when he had to?
Yes.
He wasn't the best tackle in the world, but he was certainly above average.
Sometimes you just take the guy because you think he's a heck of a talent and a heck of a player, and you'll find a spot for him. You know, and the versatility is just another wonderful thing to have down the line.
Thank you, Warren.
Appreciate the call.
Thanks, guys.
Hey, good call. Thank you very much. And that's, look, and to me, and it's funny because I think Paul and I kind of started this process on opposite ends of the spectrum here on where we wanted to go. And I still think we're a little bit different because he wouldn't pick a quarterback pretty much under any circumstances.
Correct.
And I'm much more inclined to do so if you believe in a guy. But once you put that aside, I think we're pretty much on the same page in terms of what the best thing to do here is.
Oh, because there are a number of different ways that carry a lot of logic with them, John.
Sure.
There is truly no wrong answer here. Even though I'm dead set against taking a quarterback, if Dave Gettleman thinks he has a lifelong guaranteed lock franchise guy, you got to let him do it. I mean, as much as I'm against it, I could understand if he did it. I couldn't say that he was wrong. Just because it's not my preference doesn't mean he's wrong.
No, there are logical reasons for drafting Barkley, for drafting Chubb, for drafting Nelson,
yes,
for trading down to 5, for trading down to 12, or for drafting a quarterback.
Yes.
There are logical reasons for all of that.
Every one of those cases can be made.
Now,
everyone.
Now, if they go and draft Will Hernandez second overall, we can have a conversation about it not being smart. But that's not going to happen. Their Giants could not be in a better situation here at second overall. Well, they could be picking first. Besides picking first, the Giants could not be in a better situation picking a second overall. They could not be in a better spot. 201-939-4513. Let's go to Shakes in Baltimore on line one. What's up, Shakes?
Hey, Shakes. How are you?
Hey, what's going on, fellas?
Doing well. How are you?
I'm fine. I'm good. Thanks, John, for coming through on the show yesterday. Appreciate it.
Always happy to help. You know, you guys are my boys.
No doubt. All right, so this draft, right? This is what I wanted to talk about. I wanted to say something, then I wanted to get into something, like, a little fun.
Sure, go ahead.
So here's the thing. I totally agree with you, John, that number 5 is the sweet spot. Now, before the Jets made this trade to the Colts, I was looking at the Jets. Because y'all know I want Barkley. Is
yep.
Barkley a bust, all right? But I was always looking at a contingency plan. Like, if the Browns did take Barkley at number 1, I was
right.
Like, what would I do? You know, and I was always looking at number 6 at the Jets. Because I knew the Colts wasn't going to take a quarterback. They were going to either take the pass rusher. So when they made the trade, I started to look at the Broncos. And I'm looking at the Broncos because, again, like I came on the show and said, there is no way that Cleveland don't take a quarterback at
nope.
number 1.
There no way.
Is no way they don't do that.
No way.
How can you feed that to the fans?
No.
Remember that episode. So then I'm looking at it like if we traded with Denver – oh, it'll be 1, 2, 3 quarterbacks. So that leaves 4, Cleveland. Now, you said Cleveland from a source that you know says that they really ain't going to look at Saquon. I don't trust that.
No, look, Shakes, honestly, Shakes, I would not say I'm super confident about that. But I think it's an inkling, but I would still be – if you really want Saquon and the Browns are picking
yeah,
up 4,
very cautious.
I'd be nervous.
Yeah, very cautious. So my thing is this, right? And this is where I want to get into the fun part, right?
Yeah, sure.
All right, so let's say we do trade with Denver and get the 5th overall pick.
Okay.
And some more picks, second rounders and all types of stuff.
Sure.
Whatever. Okay.
So get their 2 this year and
anyway,
then 1 next year. Sure.
Yeah, great, whatever. Okay, now you got the 5th, right? And now you got all those extra picks. Knowing that I don't trust Cleveland. it wouldn't really cost that much to move up one more spot. Right?
Oh, my goodness. You want a deal again? You want to make 2 deals back to back?
That's what I'm saying. I'm trying to maneuver some more.
Wow.
I applaud your creativity, Shakes. And it's funny, Daniel Jeremiah didn't bring up your specific scenario. He went in a different direction. He thought the Giants could trade down with Buffalo
right, and then move back
get
up.
All those picks and then sneak back up to like maybe 6 where the Colts are when they try to trade down.
I've heard that.
So that's a scenario I have heard. Shakes, to me, if you're trading down from 2, you have to be okay in your mind to get one of those 3 position players. If you're
yeah.
dead set on wanting one of those guys, you stay at 2. I'm not, which is why I'm okay going to 5.
You know, Shakes, I should give you one other, again, another George Young theory. He was always of the belief that if you're in a slot, and a guy who you absolutely positively wanted and had all the boxes checked on, and he's sitting there, you don't get fancy. You just take the guy.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. It's just that simple. George always believed that if you second-guess yourself on that move, you will always be kicking yourself in the pants.
Yeah, and I believe that. That's why my thing is, if Barkley is there at number two, you take him no matter what.
And now, I get it.
If he's not there, then that five seems so much logical to me. And the thing about it is, even if he is there and we do trade, right, I still like it kind of. That's why I say I agree with you, John, because my second guy, my contingency plan, if we don't get Barkley, is to get Nelson. So it assures me to get either guy.
Exactly.
There you go.
That's what I'm saying.
Thanks for taking my call, y'all.
Hey, thanks, Shakes, and congratulations on 1,000 episodes of The Shakedown.
Cool stuff.
Good stuff, man. Let's go to Amari in Atlanta on line 4. What's up, Amari? How are you, buddy?
Hey, fellas. Thanks for taking the call.
Hey, thanks for calling in, pal. What's up?
So I've got two quick points and one topic of discussion.
Sure, bring it in.
So, one, I just want to start a week without hearing any OBJ news. Like, if I could start next week and not hear about OBJ, that'd be amazing.
Where do we sign?
Well, maybe now is the time then to just throw this out there. Paul Schwartz of the Post, quoting Dave Gettleman, repeatedly said, quote, "You don't quit on talent," close quote, several times in relation to Odell Beckham Jr. We're now closing the book on number 13 for the rest of the show. Go right ahead.
All right. Appreciate it. So other thing, I'm a huge fan of all the Gettleman moves that he's made so far. I think it's really recovering the team in like a cap situation, just player personnel. Don't really get the Jay Stu signing, but you know, everything else I've been really happy with.
Right.
So the topic of discussion is about Bradley Chubb.
Sure.
So I just want to list off a few names. I'm sure y'all have already done this in your own time, but you got Khalil Mack, Jadeveon Clowney, Dante Fowler Jr., Joey Bosa, DeForest Buckner, Myles Garrett. So as far as I've been able to find, Bradley Chubb only really compares to DeForest Buckner in terms of like draft profile, and he was like an 8 or 9 pick.
Yeah, no, you know, so what though? I think they're very different players. DeForest Buckner is more of a 3 technique. Bradley Chubb's a defensive end.
Yeah,
and I know Bucky Brooks thinks that he's more advanced technique wise than Myles Garrett was, though Myles Garrett was a much more explosive athlete, which I think makes him the better draft prospect. From what I've been able to tell, honestly, he kind of rates in that 4 to 6 area, kind of where Joey Bosa went a few years ago, or was supposed to go until the Chargers, I think, took him at 3 or 2?
Yeah, they took him
in that
3.
Draft?
Yeah,
3?
Three.
Yeah, but I think from an athletic standpoint, and I think that's what people look like at a lot for DNs, he profiles more as a Bosa type of athlete than he does as, say, a Khalil Mack or a Von Miller or somebody like that.
Yeah.
Sure. With regard to the number 2 pick, a lot of people, they're saying we can't take Barkley because he only won with his athleticism, and like he wasn't like he can't out athlete everyone in the NFL. Well, I feel like you can say a lot of the same thing about like Chubb. Like, he doesn't, like a guy like Joey Bosa, what makes him so good is his ability to just string like counter move after counter move after counter move, and sort of like unrelenting like that. From a lot of film analysis I've watched of Bradley Chubb, like, you know, he'll do a spin move, and if that doesn't work and he can't out athlete you, then it's sort of like he can't do anything.
Well, the fact that he has moves at all, I think, and that's one of the problems with Marcus Davenport out of UTSA. He might be a top athlete. He has no pass rush technique or moves.
Right.
Chubb has technique and moves. He absolutely does.
You know, if you want to try to sell this point home, one of the ways you could do it is that Chubb is an edge rusher. That's what he is.
Yes.
Barkley has the potential to help your running game and your passing game.
Right.
So there are two aspects to which he can upgrade your team.
Maybe even kickoff return if you want to go that way.
Maybe even that way. That's even possible too. Chubb is strictly a one-dimensional. He's an edge rusher. That's what he is. So if you want to sell people on that and say he's not as valuable as Barkley, you might want to present that as an argument.
Okay. So just to tie it off, I think you know, if I had to give a letter grade to our possible moves right now, I'd say trading the pick and acquiring more picks, that'd be like my A-plus move.
Okay.
Give me that all day. Taking Quentin Nelson or Barkley, that'd be like my A-minus, B-plus move.
Okay.
Taking a QB or Bradley Chubb, that'd be my B-minus move. And, like, you know, obviously I'd be fine with a B-minus, but I'd much rather have the A-plus.
I think that's fair.
So with that, I'll take it off the air. Thanks for taking the call, guys, and can't wait for the draft.
Yeah, us too. Okay. Thanks, Amari. I appreciate it.
I can't wait for opening day.
And look, honestly, I think he makes a good point. I mean, there are no D moves here. You know, you either like it or you're like, okay, but you're still fine with it. You know what I mean?
Well, you know, fortunately, if the Giants were going to have a washout season, they had a washout season where they're picking now in the top five where there are bona fide star prospects there. I mean, as I've said to you folks many times in the past, I remember they were desperate for a defensive end, and they picked way up high in the draft. They were number five.
Simeon Rice went off the board.
And there were four guys.
Orlando Pace went off the board.
Blue chippers.
Who are the other two guys?
I can't even remember.
It was Rice, Pace. Ugh.
Other than the Giants drafted Cedric Jones.
And the hope was that Lawrence Phillips was going to go in the top three, right? And he dropped, which is
correct,
what told you,
because
right?
He was such a head case.
Right.
George
1998,
Young.
Paul? Is that 98?
Oh, I can't remember the year. It all runs together.
No, 98 was Peyton. Let's see.
Here's the point. The point is the Giants were on the outside looking in of the four elite players. They were number five, and they take Cedric Jones because George Young was dying to trade out. He did not have conviction of a guy who checked all the boxes at number five. He did not have it. He was dying to trade out, and nobody wanted the fifth pick. So he said, okay, we're going to go to need. What do we need the most? Because there's no best player athlete available because it's not a great draft. He went for need. He took Cedric Jones, and he was a capital B bust.
Keyshawn Johnson at one.
Yes.
Kevin Hardy at two.
Right.
Simeon Rice at three. Mm-hmm. And then wouldn't you have loved to have Jonathan Ogden at number four?
Okay.
And then, by the way, after Cedric Jones, Lawrence Phillips, Terry Glenn, Tim Biakabutuka, Ricky Dudley, Willie Anderson, Alex Molden, Regan Upshaw, Walt Harris. Not exactly a conglomerate of future Hall of Famers there.
No.
Okay?
And the Giants knew this, and they were begging people, please, let's make a deal. We want out at five.
But you need a suitor.
Okay, so that's why what he said before about there's no D choices. The Giants at two, whatever they do, they're going to come through with some good stuff, okay? They're not going to get stuck in this spot where they can't do anything with it, and they just go, we're desperate to fill a hole, let's take Cedric Jones. Not going to happen.
Final call of the show, and we only have a minute left, Coach Marvin, so I'm not going to say a word. I'm going to let you go for 60 seconds. I'm going to time you, so make sure you get your point in 60 seconds, all right? Go ahead.
All right, guys. I know y'all doing a great job. Good show today. Just wanted to, you know, apologize to Odell. I know I was hard on him, but I just care about the young man. And keep this in thought that there's three people that can destroy a team if they get in your locker room. And those three people are me, myself, and I. And I just don't want him to be one of those guys. And also, you know, I want Barkley. But if they can move down to number five, I agree with you, John, that is the best spot to do what they want to do. Y'all have a good day, guys.
Ah, Marvin, you came in 30 seconds. That was impressive. Good job.
I'm going to take a few of those seconds away. I'm going to make it very simple for you. Dave Gettleman said, I don't want players who love to win. Everybody loves to win. I want players who hate to lose. Well, for everything that Dave Gettleman has said, that certainly is one that carries a lot of weight. And Odell Beckham Jr. is a guy who hates to lose.
No, he does. That's absolutely true.
Take it for what it's worth.
Absolutely.
Not much more to say than that.
Just want to preview what's coming up here. We're going to start our college prospect tour over the next three or so weeks. We're going to have different guys from different schools talking about different players. Who decided was going to go tomorrow?
I totally forgot.
Texas?
It might be. I do know we're up. We are starting tomorrow.
Yes, we are starting tomorrow.
I think Texas is up tomorrow,
yeah, Paul,
but I'm not sure.
Paul and I actually just went through all the schools, so we're scheduled for the next 3.5 weeks. We're going to have different guys from different schools, multiple guys on certain shows, so we might take a couple less callers, but I feel like we've kind of gone through all these permutations a bunch of times. You know where we're at. So let's try to find a little bit more about these guys, and we'll have our draft experts as well sprinkled in over the next few weeks. As we get closer to the NFL draft. So that's what's on the horizon. Also a reminder, guys, there's no show this Friday. The office is closed for Good Friday. So we'll have shows Wednesday and Thursday, no show on Friday, and then we'll continue moving onwards as we head forwards closer to the draft with people that cover these prospects at their relative colleges. So for Paul Dottino, I'm John Schmelk. Thanks so much for joining us. Stay tuned to Giants.com. Michael Eisen will have a story on what Dave Gettleman had to say at his press conference today. Make sure you stay tuned for that. And then everyone's back in the offices tomorrow. Coaches are back, and they'll really start getting that draft board cooking, and some decisions will start getting made to what the Giants might do with that second overall pick. And, of course, you'll have the pre-draft visits as well. You can get 30 players in here, and I'm sure
and
the Giants
too.
Will have all those guys that we've talked about for that second overall pick in here to meet face-to-face for entire days at a time.
You never know.
We'll
you
see.
Never know.
Thanks for joining us. We'll see you tomorrow.